I just want to remind everybody to keep our paper stuff to a minimum as best we can, so everybody can hear. Are there any announcements?
I have none.
Okay. Can we get an approval of the agenda, please?
Motion to approve agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. Getting ahead of myself.
How are you getting ahead of yourself? You want to make a motion to approve the agenda?
Sure.
Do you want to ask if there's any additions?
I'll second that.
Well, I would assume that everybody can read now, they know. That if they've got any additions, corrections, additions, or reorganizations, they would say. None? Okay. Want to start again, Ed?
Yes, ma'am. Motion to approve the agenda.
So moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Thank you.
And approved. All right. We've got some folks from the public here, and I'd like to ask you if you choose to speak during the public forum, if you could please limit the comments to stuff that would be new or relevant, pertinent information I already met with you and discussed as the watershed district. And then Tracy is going to keep us timed.
I have to figure out how to use my iPhone. I think I need to ask you really sorry to get that.
And hold us to the 3-minute rule for the public forum. I would also like to ask you to refrain from commenting during the Sunnybrook Lake discussion. And the reason for that is that we're really sharing as managers the results of the meetings with the county commissioners that Ed and John and I went to in the last 2 weeks, as well as sometime during the course of the agenda, the county commissioners budget meeting, which was just on Tuesday. So John does have a draft outline of some actions, and it's really a good time for us to discuss those between us as managers and to see which direction we're going to move forward on. So I would like you to please honor that so that we don't go into the weeds as far as those discussions go. So with that, does anybody have anything that they'd like to say? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if we are to listen, which we're happy to do during the Sunnybrook discussion, if we have questions or comments, how do you suggest that we get those to you?
If I could ask you to please write those down, and then we'll forward those to, you can forward them to all of us on the board and John to make sure that those get answered. Tracy, does that seem like a reasonable
approach? Yeah, that seems very reasonable. I mean, what happens is, I know we're all tempted to have a dialogue, managers too, but what happens because of open meeting laws, which is just the way it should be, the managers don't have a time to, where they can just share their ideas without sharing it with the public. And you should hear what they're discussing. And I know we have an innate desire to want to say, but what about this? But that's not our role. Our role is to let them talk. But we wanted to say that now so that you can present what you want to in this public time. Then let's allow the managers to really have their open discussion about how they feel, what they want to do, what actions they might take. They'll have some decisions tonight. They might take an action, they may not. And then you'll have some opportunity to know they've met with people quite a bit. You can write it, you can submit it to John. Any way you want to put in a comment that you think was a misunderstanding or something that they haven't heard before. And I know that we all think we do better with dialogue, but at this point, the board is entitled to have some discussion without interruption. Does that seem fair?
I appreciate that comment. Just one question I would have, though, is there going to be an opportunity for people to ask the dumb question, let's say we didn't understand something, or is there a forum, you know, most public improvement projects usually have a public hearing, if you will, where people have the chance to respond, ask questions.
I think that'll be up to the manager. I mean, if they actually make a motion to approve to actually not do a project, but to maybe approach a homeowner to buy a home, there may not be any other give and take on that. If there is going to be a project, we'll follow the exact same steps that we always do, which will be open for comments and so forth. So it just probably won't be tonight, and I guess we'll see what the managers decide. You know, there's been a lot of discussions on whether this should be a project or not. You've seen in the public minutes that it doesn't appear feasible. The cost of a project and the uncertainty of it doesn't appear feasible. Those conversations have been had. There's been plenty of opportunity to probably respond to that. But tonight, I think what's before the board, as you can tell in the packet, is a policy decision, that they're going to try to establish a policy. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to apply completely to Sunnybrook, but that's the conversation we want them to have, and they have not been able to have that because it needs to be here where we all can hear what they have. I can't promise you that there will be more forum than today, so we want to make sure you preserve and use your 3 minutes on new things that you think they should understand before they have their discussion tonight. Then they're going to have their discussion tonight. They're going to decide if they're going to take action.
I think also, just to answer your question too, if you've seen the Sunnybrook Lake packet, that's in the packet of minutes, that there will be some public meetings with Sunnybrook Lake residents moving forward too. So, let me answer your question a little bit more as to what can happen moving forward. That makes sense? Much like what we've done in the past, maybe it would be more of a group type setting, maybe it would be individual. I'm not exactly sure what that would look like right now, but it is discussed in here, and we'll discuss that when we get to the Sunnybrook Lake piece. That makes sense?
All right, we'd like to start.
Candace?
Candace Kramer. I guess my question is, you know, I'm a little bit frustrated with not being able to have some dialogue as, you know, as you're bringing stuff up and talking about it, because, you know, I've been here for the last few meetings, and one of them was the workshop where we were not able to ask a question, where we were not able to give any input or do anything like that. And so now we're moving forward to setting up a budget, and yet, you know, once the budget, you know, you set the budget and you have certain things that you're going to do, like, you know, from listening to your minutes and listening to the dialogue with the Washington County Commissioners, you know, you've got 3 to 4 places that you're going to help with something, but we know nothing about it, and then now we're not going to have a chance to have any dialogue with you again. It seems frustrating.
Okay, thanks for your input on that, and I guess I'd like you to jot your notes down, and after we get done having a larger discussion today, depending on the topic, see if your questions are answered.
Because when we had the discussion with the City of Grant and whatever, like last year, and you wanted them to raise the roads, and then you were going to, you know, you were doing this project where you took the water behind our property and took it right over to Keith Avenue so it could start, the pumping could start earlier, which has been a problem for us all the time, is that the water doesn't get over there fast enough and then people flood. And so the first we heard about the fact that this project is too much money is now. I mean, you never discussed the project with anybody.
Actually, we did discuss that at our public meeting. We discussed the expense of the project, that it was $5.3 million. We went through the whole engineering piece of it, actually several times. So I'm sorry if you missed that, but that's been discussed at least 2 or 3 times.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll invite people one time to say what they would like to say, and I'll start the timing at that.
So does anybody else have anything to say during the public forum? Would you like to limit your comments to 3 minutes and then jot notes down as we go through when we get to the Sunnybrook Lake project? Do you have anything to say now? Or
I have a quick question.
Yes.
The process or the agenda itself and the way it's formatted, could you put the public forum at the end of the meeting versus at the beginning?
Well, the reason that we have it at the beginning is that folks might want to come in here and say something really quickly related to aquatic invasive species, or there could be someone from the DOT that wants to just mention something that wasn't on the agenda, and we like to be able to allow them to leave. If you've noticed, some of our meetings get kind of lengthy. To make them sit here until 9, 10 o'clock at night waiting for the public forum to come up seems really unfair.
Sure. Is there a way that you could incorporate a public forum in the beginning and at the end?
I don't really want to do that, to do it twice, to be honest. But if anybody else has a comment on that, Ed, you kind of...
You know, maybe you could limit
yes, ma'am.
Each individual...
We could make arrangements. And you can either talk to somebody, or we could possibly do that. And it depends on the nature of the of what it is you're looking to find out. If it's lengthy, if it's something very involved, we set up the format. The reason we have this is because we certainly don't want to bore you, and you might forget what you wanted to say. So, we'd rather you say
it. My point being is I think each individual citizen that's here can still remain and sustain that 3 minute slot that you guys allot, whether it's in the beginning or the end. And if you are here at each meeting, you have, everybody's got that 1 3-minute public forum. And I think for some people that would like to sit here and listen to the Sunnybrook portion of this, maybe would stay till the end and would rather have an opportunity to speak at the end versus in the front. That's okay. All I'd say.
Okay.
Well, I personally think it would be reasonable to have a brief, some brief comments after our discussion, because I think that, you know, this is an ongoing process, and we're trying to find the best solution that we can, and that has a lot to do with the residents and how we can accommodate the residents. After we have this conversation, I would support having a brief period of comments or questions because it may be useful.
So what my idea was tonight was, Manager Fetcher, is that you would guys have an opportunity to speak amongst
yourselves. Yeah.
If you feel comfortable that you can take action without any input from someone, then you take some action. If you don't, you leave this meeting having the public hear what you have discussed, and then I don't think anyone has ever been denied an opportunity to meet with someone, to talk with someone, to follow it up, or bring it to the next meeting. But I think what we are trying to avoid is that an all-evening dialogue where we haven't heard what the manager's preferences
are.
I agree
100%.
So it's been kind of on my shoulders to set that parameters for tonight.
Okay, you got good shoulders. Thank you.
Any other questions from the public? All right, hearing nothing else, we'll continue on with our agenda. So we've got the consent calendar in front of us.
I'll move to approve the consent calendar.
I will second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Consent calendar is approved. All right, any other updates from any partners, volunteers, or our CAC community? Had anybody, and I did ask John if he has any comments or updates about the status of Chuck. And he said he doesn't at this time, but he should maybe make a note to follow up with that. First, probably to find someone that's going to do water level readings for us. But I would guess that it's probably not likely that Chuck is going to continue doing those, although I'd like to let him speak for himself. But for sure, he's going to be out of commission for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you see his daughter's email to us?
Mm-hmm.
He fell.
Oh.
And did he break his hip, I think, or he was in the hospital? He was in the hospital while he fell taking water level.
Oh, it must have been when he was gone. Oh.
Yep. Okay, any comments about that? Hearing none, then we'll move on to the inspection report.
President Lucas, managers, I was out of town last week, so you did not get a report in your packet. I did put a printed copy of a report I generated today, and maybe I would suggest that I maybe highlight some things from this week that I think are of interest to you, and then you could certainly read those or ask any questions. Now or even later on if you wish, but I thought I would just hit some of the highlights from this week, if that's okay. So on Monday, actually over the weekend, we had a complaint call. There was dewatering from Legends of Woodbury. That's at the KOA campground. It's a senior center. They were dewatering their retention pond to finish the last 75 feet be the storm swirler in, there was an issue where they flooded the farm field next to them and into the wetland. So I followed up with them on Monday and they walked me through their process. They had pictures, they had documented the whole thing. They had hired an outside firm to block the pond to knock the sediment down. They set up a temporary plastic pool with baffles and ran the water through that to knock the sediment down. And then they allowed the water to flow along their silt fence to make its way where it naturally drained. Where they failed is that they let too much water go. They should have slowed that down and it flooded that field and it made its way to the wetland. Now, as of Monday, that had all infiltrated. The farmer was actually able to get out and harvest that field. And so, but I did tell them you can't just send water to your neighbor like this. And so even though they're BMPs, they had almost everything right except the amount they let go. So that's been duly noted. They are restoring stabilizing the ditch, both that project, and there's a Woodbury right turn lane there. There's an overlapping permit, and that's actually being stabilized this week. So I would expect by next week, everything out there should be good. At Royal Oak, they have, I had written under tolerance to the 10th Street entrance. They actually paved it today. The 10th Street exit entrance, the curb and asphalt's in place. The Manning Trail entrance is waiting for final grade and sod. They were working on that this afternoon. That's an area that we had some concern about the water leaving the site towards Manning Trail. And so they're working on that right now. Halcyon Cemetery, I stopped there this week and asked their crew to address some anchoring of silt fence on the southwest corner of the site.
Is that the second time you asked that?
It is, yes. And they did it right away. So we're going to have maybe a lesson in proper anchoring silt fence to happen here. Senior high school, they actually last week worked on cleaning up the punch list. The parking lot outlets that have been a problem, they rip-wrapped the two outlets from the parking lot where all the water sheeted into the infiltration basin, and they lowered the overflow outlet infiltration basin. They attempted to rework the bottom of the infiltration basin. It's pretty mucky. So I guess we'll see where that goes. They have an issue in that area because they dump all their snow plowing, all the snow that from the parking lot goes there. So it kills all the vegetation. So there's an ongoing issue of trying to establish vegetation. And then the sediment obviously has been an issue. And they've had Prairie Restoration out there to consult with them on what they might do, but it's the only place they claim they have a place to put all that snow. So I think we're going to have an ongoing issue in that area. They also fixed some south side pond slopes by their tennis courts where there was some erosion. And I've asked them to go back down blanket and seed those areas that were previous erosion spots. They did everything but stabilize it. So they're supposed to follow up with that. I did meet with Pat Brokamp and Josh Phillips this week a couple of times from Bar Engineering. I just went along on a couple inspections at the 94 rest stop pond in the dam to see how they inspect the infrastructure, just to get familiar with the system, and also up in the Tri-Lakes area. Northport, I spoke with the project manager about adding additional silt fence around one of the retention ponds. And I was also at the North St. Paul Street project this week. I met with Ross Badger, the WSB compliance manager, and discussed some of the sediment issues at our filtration basin, about cleaning that up. There's about 75 feet of the drainage swale entrance to it that has a lot of sediment. And I've asked them to add that as a pay item for their contractor for next spring. This project is going to get bigger next year, not smaller.
What's a pay item?
Pay item means that someone's going to get paid to clean it up. Otherwise, no one wants to clean it up because nobody has been authorized or has submitted a bid to clean it up. So this way, it's going to be actual in the their bid in the spring, the cleaning up of that. And then I talked to John about it.
Oh, so that's going to go out with the road construction bid?
It'll be part of the spring project. They'll add that as a
item. Which is the road?
The road construction. So that they'll get in and clean that area out, and they'll have to consult with John on how they might do that, what their approach is going to be.
So they're not going to clean it out before that?
It's not in the plans right now. The system is functioning, but they did dump a lot of sediment from the heavy rains in there.
Yeah, I would say more than 75 feet, but in any case, I think it goes all the way up that whole first segment.
The from the road, from the corner where it comes out of the storm sewer, that long drainage swell has sediment in it, but I didn't see sediment in the larger area at all. But in that front area, there's sediment in there. I can certainly go back and talk to them about cleaning it up this fall. I think one of the issues they need to look at is how they stage that project, because if they open almost streets up like they did for the utilities, and we have rains like we had last year, it's going to be much worse this year. So I think that's one of the things that maybe we have to push on too, is how they structured or how they phased that so that it's more controllable.
It's so close to the lake. They're starting to sweep. They said that they're going to sweep 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. Done it so far, sort of. What do you think about this? I mean, we just spent a whole bunch of money fixing that darn thing, and I don't want to wreck it.
Well, then, Lucas Managers, I talked with Inspector Brower, and I recommended, as you said, that they submit a plan on how they plan to correct the basin and that we review it. As you might recall in the past, they have done what they thought was best for the basin, which was not consistent with what we thought was best for the basin.
So when you say they, are you talking about the city?
The city is the one who, city's project caused the sediment in the basin, and they should be responsible for correcting the situation.
Well, keep on.
And any other questions or?
Did you mention, if I missed it, the black culvert for the Dunn residence?
Oh, yeah, I stopped by there, as you remember, I think in my last report, and I mentioned they put the culvert in at the end of the driveway, and the contractor basically covered the inlet and outlet with rock. Not only they've not done that, but as I look at it further, the way they graded it, the water can't even get to the rock anyway. So it's really not serving any purpose. So I've asked them to address it. The city of Afton is holding the surety. We're holding the surety, and I told them it's not coming back. Afton won't release it till we say it's okay, because they want that culvert fixed, because there's an issue with another block culvert down the street the city's going to address. If you look at the corner of Trading Post and 30th Street, it's on the north side of 30th Street, halfway up the hill. It's a new driveway. Mm-hmm. The driveway below that has a plug culvert the city's going to address. Mm-hmm. And the city's going to address the drainage ditch on the south side of the road that got messed up last year when they repaved. And they had some erosion. Even though they had erosion control in place, it's really steep. And so they need to go back and address that, because the water needs to move to both sides of the road, because we have a structure at the beginning of the ravine. That water, you know, the water from the north side needs to stay on the north side of the road. The south side goes under, and it goes into this control structure in the ravine. And so otherwise it sheets across the road into another neighboring driveway, and then the road's right above our culvert. So it's a kind of a going to be an ongoing maintenance issue there if those things don't get addressed.
So have they been responsive at all? Have they answered your questions, Clem Construction? Did they give you a schedule and when they're going to
They haven't
there?
Given me a schedule. And I think I'll probably need to go back and firm that up. It needs to get addressed here this fall.
Or it freezes.
Yeah, we can't let it go until spring. Mm-hmm. And I'll follow up with the city, too, to see what their plan is. I know it was on their punch list from last year's paving to address that issue.
Okay. And Thomas's infiltration basins are all still full.
They're all full, every one of them. They're not working. They're going to have to dry them up. They're going to have to rework them. They could probably go in there and skim the top or till it or something because there's sand underneath. They did add all the sand in the media they were supposed to, but it's all been capped by sediment.
What about this Schultz property?
Oh, yes, I was out. Dr. Schultz in Matanidi, or maybe he's actually in Pine Springs.
Where is that?
He is between Hilton Trail and, you know, he's at the end of Ideal Avenue North. He's east of Hilton Trail, and he has a lake and a wetland.
East of Hilton Trail.
East of Hilton Trail. So the water's been getting high back there.
Yeah.
I went out and looked at it.
I was backed out this week. Long time.
Yeah. So he asked. He called me before I left town. I said, "Well, I'll come out this week and look at it." He was going to talk to his neighbors about any blockage. I went out there and I walked the drainage creek from Hilton Trail back to his, to the ponds that are backing up. And there is a dam at the outlet. There's a downed tree and there's a dam that's about 10 feet long by 4 feet high. And I had asked him not to add any gravel to the driveway in our last discussion. Well, he had a driveway. Gravel to the driveway, raised it by 10 inches. So he's looking for help because the blockage is not on his property, so he can't really address it. And so I spoke with John. John's reached out to Pine Springs to see if they have a policy or a maintenance, something in place to address these types of issues.
Where does this drain to Kapoles?
As a Lucas Managers, it is adjacent to Kapoles Pond, but it actually drains to the west, okay, toward Hilton.
Okay. So we're talking to Pine Springs to see where that might go before we go back and discuss it with him. But it is something that does need to be addressed.
All right, does anybody else have any more questions on the inspection report?
No, ma'am.
Thank you, Jeff. All right, moving along is the Sunnybrook Lake Neighborhood Flood Protection Project. So included in your package, John included a background, introduction and background information. I would like to just briefly go over what we've done and some history that's occurred. For those that are in the audience that haven't heard this before, which I can't believe there's too many people in here that haven't heard this before, but for the sake of attendance, I'll go over that again. And if John will, I'd actually like John to pick up the part where we get into the draft flood protection strategy, to explain that to the, all of us, of what we drafted. If you don't mind doing that, please, John. All right. So taking it from the top here, in the background section, you know that Sunnybrook Lake has, those homes were constructed in the late 60s and the early 70s before Valley Branch had a permitting process. At that time, it was Washington County that was granting housing permits. people were unaware of flood levels, and it was a process that we're not using at this time. It hasn't been in that situation for quite some time now. So we were established in 1968. Our early mandate was in flood level protection for the watershed district. That has also morphed into water quality protection, which includes aquatic invasive species, lots of benchmark monitoring, and PMPs with the conservation district in conjunction with perhaps the DNR and the MPCA municipality. Back in our records, we've seen flooding in the Sunnybrook Lake area since 1983-84. John, can you confirm or double check my years on that?
President Lucas, I think we have photos from 1985, so mid-80s.
So for roughly around 40 years, the flooding has been periodic but has been increasing in its frequency. To at this juncture, we're looking at roughly probably a 4 to 6 year time frame of the flooding frequency of the homes. Sunnybrook Lake is particularly difficult because it is a completely landlocked basin. There are other areas in the district that experience some wet basement and property damage. There are very few that have the geology and geography that Sunnybrook Lake does, that is completely landlocked. And John states that in his memo here. So there are 11 homes that are below the 100 level flood plain, and additionally, 5 homes are below the ultimate overflow of the flood. There's a figure attached if you guys have picked up a memo so you can take a look at that.
Lucas, the audience does not have a copy of the memo.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. You can have a copy of my memo when I'm done. How about that? let's see. I'm not going to go through this every single detail, but we did look at in 2017. Potential engineering project where we routed and adjusted culverts, considered the easements, considered working with Indian Hills Golf Course to purchase easements there to expedite the high water level and the transfer of water from the Sunnybrook Lake and the surrounding ponds into what would have been a stormwater pond on Indian Hills Golf. And as everybody knows in the audience, we have a pumping contract. We continue to work with Mr. Reagan at Indian Hills if there is existing flood. Which luckily, in 2018, there has not been. We originally estimated that project to be about $3 million, but we spent a fair amount of time going through the engineering studies, and by the end of 2017, concluded that it was not going to be a $3 million project. It was going to be more like a $5.3 million project. So in the interest of using taxpayer dollars and looking at the tax records of the homes that are affected, we rejected that plan as being not cost effective. That's number one. Number two, the plan was rejected because it doesn't necessarily permanently alleviate potential flooding. Was really a flood risk, but with the frequent floods that we're having and maybe increased intensity and greater volume of water, you could still be flooded even though we were going to incorporate that engineering project. So it was not a permanent solution. So for those reasons, we put that aside. We considered at a workshop in 2018 to not do anything again, which would just continue problem, as everybody knows, that's been going on for nearly 40 years now. We're looking at preparing emergency action plans and working with the City of Grant. We've actually also talked with Washington County on sandbagging, portable toilets, things like that, should something grave occur. We looked at individual projects, which is nothing new to flood mitigation and risk, and that included surveying, berms, different things. That's been an ongoing conversation since I think the first time that surfaced was in 2002. John, you can correct me if I'm right on my date on that. We also discussed buyout of some of the lower level homes and implementing the project for lower flood levels. So, in the earlier part of 2018, John and I met with Mayor Huebner from Grant Township, the city administrator, Kim, and Commissioner Murin. And we agreed at that time to have conversations with the homeowners that are affected. It was actually, Commissioner Murin was actually in the room tonight. His suggestion that we find out what those individuals would like to do, how they foresaw their properties being handled, what they predicted in the future, what their wishes were, and just to have, in general, a listening session that was actually private and not in a public meeting, so they wouldn't feel intimidated to share information and maybe be more forthcoming.
And so everything I've read here, you've met with everything except one group, is that right?
So there was one homeowner, everybody was contacted and we requested meetings. There was one homeowner that opted not to meet with us and actually sent you a letter or an email that said that they were not interested in meeting. And the other homeowner, I think he reached out, but we never heard back from them. At that time, we had already met with 11 homes. And so then we just didn't pursue it anymore after 3 or 4 months. We appreciate everybody's time and effort in meeting with us. I spent, you know, an hour and a half. We went to most people's houses to take a look at what their concerns were, looked at the geology and geography, where the water flow was, learned if they had had issues with wet basements and flooding previously, and what their concerns were. So, we've created a draft budget, understanding from the managers that still something needs to be done with Sunnybrook Lake, and we'd like to try to take some action to alleviate some of the flood control. We created a draft budget with an increase of $537,000 to Sunnybrook Lake Neighborhood Flood Protection Program. It's included in our draft budget levy. It's a large increase in our levy. There's a couple of other factors that are contributing to that. One of those is some work on some of the higher water quality protection areas that's listed in our 10-year plan that we've been putting off and we haven't done yet. And another one is efforts to work on our 1007 project, which we need to do inspection and maintenance on that hasn't been done in 30 years, and that's a very expensive endeavor. But the bulk of the budget is for Sunnybrook Lake. So with that concern that we're having such an increase in our levy, we discussed it amongst the board and we thought that it would be prudent to talk to the county commissioners and explain what was occurring. So we did that, actually in a less than 2 week time frame. Treasurer Marchand, John and I met with all the county commissioners and the county staff. We met with first Commissioner Murin and Commissioner Creasel along with Assistant Administrator Kevin Corbett on October 12th. We then met with Commissioner Wilkes and Jack LeBoule from South Washington County with Molly O'Rourke in attendance on October 16th. And then we met with Commissioner Stan
Kowalski.
Again with Administrator O'Rourke on October 18th. And then we actually had a county budget meeting this past Tuesday, which is what we drafted before we discussed that. But we explained the meetings that we had over the course of the summer and began to formulate a draft plan. So what John is going to talk about today, and I'm going to turn this over to him unless anybody from the board has any clarifying questions at this time, is to outline a potential draft plan for the managers to consider. Do any of the managers have any questions about the brief history and the course of the discussions with the county commissioners? So Dave, Tony, and Lincoln that weren't there, meeting with everybody and the outcomes, anything specific about that that you'd like to ask any one of the three of us?
I'll just make a comment that I really appreciate the support from the commissioners the other day.
Okay, Hearing no other comments, then I'd like to, John to please launch into what this could look like moving forward.
May I ask just one question? Are you launching, John, into Mr. Hanson, into an analysis of a general strategy for any kind of protection, or are you gearing this towards Sunnybrook in particular?
President Lucas, managers, Attorney Gallitz, while this is specific to Sunnybrook Lake, it would apply to other parts of Valley Branch.
So you're asking the board to discuss it as a future policy too. So
keep
that in mind. We know what it would apply to because we have the immediacy here, but you're also saying that it would be applied in other areas throughout the district.
President Lucas, managers, attorney towards Gallowitz. Yeah, the managers do need to keep that in mind because there are homes in other parts of Valley Branch Watershed District that are below the 100-year flood elevation of their adjacent water body.
That number is 116?
I trust you.
Whatever
on that. I provided the numbers to the managers about a month or so ago. Of those numbers, I believe there's only one home that has reported a flooded basement to the city of Lake Elmo, and the city of Lake Elmo has reported that to me.
Okay.
President Lucas, managers, so the last couple pages of the memo that's in your packet talks about a draft flood protection strategy for the managers to consider. I think it's easier for the managers to edit than to create, and so my goal was to put down a draft policy that the managers could discuss, and I'd expect you to revise it and work toward adopting this policy, not only for Sunnybrook Lake neighborhood, but for other parts of the district. Through the discussions that President Lucas and I had with the neighbors, we learned that there's a handful of homes that in the Sunnybrook Lake neighborhood that flood fairly frequently, and they've had to protect their homes with sandbags to protect, to prevent water from entering their homes. And looking back at the hydrologic and hydraulic model that we have of the area, that there seems to be maybe a break line in looking at the probability so that the homes that are below the 20-year flood elevation seem to be the ones that have to use sandbags frequently. And then the home, there are other homes that are below the 100-year flood elevation, but they're more likely to flood in something like a 70-year flood event rather than a 100-year event. And so because of that seems to be the break line, and the managers have a limited budget, the draft strategy really focuses on those lower homes. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, yes.
So
most
you talk,
go ahead.
Well, just a quick question. In looking at your table here, I'm assuming you're talking about the elevation at the top of the bottom floor being the point of measure, so to speak.
President Lucas, managers, yes. In identifying the homes that are below the 20-year flood elevation, really looked at the elevation of the top of the bottom floor. Almost all the homes in the neighborhood are walkouts, but there are a few that have basements. And so for most of the homes, the lowest adjacent grade and the basement floor elevation are pretty similar, but there are a couple where the basement is 6-7 feet lower than the first floor elevation.
So the break point appears to be around 982.
Yes, yep, exactly. So the strategy lays out some things for the board to consider. The first would be for those lowest homes that the managers enter into some sort of agreement with those homeowners that Valley Branch has the first right in purchasing the home. This process could begin in 2019. The managers, as President Lucas mentioned, allocated $535,727 to Sunnybrook Lake, and that might be used to purchase one home or possibly process of a second home. We do know that one owner is willing to sell now, and another owner seems willing to sell very soon. We would be working with Attorney Galowitz and Torsa to follow the required process to purchase homes. After the purchase, the managers do what they like with the home. I'm suggesting that they demolish or move the home, properly seal the well, and abandon the septic system. The property then could be sold, first offering it to the adjacent property owners with some restrictions so that no home could be built too low on that lot in the future. Or the managers could keep the lot, grade it for a purpose such as creating a wetland bank or creating additional flood storage. There'd be no public access provided through this land. As an alternative, the managers could rehab the house and raise or resell the home. But if the managers pursue grants, most of those grants require that you demolish or move the house off the property in order to receive the grant. Then the managers would continue purchasing the properties, maybe one or two per year as the opportunity arises. For the higher homes that do not flood frequently and they have not had to protect their homes with sandbags, the managers could offer some sort of cost share program. The terms of the cost share would clearly state that the property could flood again, but it's the probability of flooding is less. It's less than the 100-year event, so it's greater than a 1% probability, but it's less likely than a 5% probability, like a 20-year event. Managers could assist in designing the flood measures, but similar to the Project 1007 residual floodplain program, it ultimately would be the landowner's responsibility to hire a contractor and obtaining the permits and giving Valley Branch a drainage easement up to the 100-year flood elevation. The cost share program, the details of that could be worked out. I would recommend that if the home is to remain and they do some sort of floodproofing or flood risk reduction effort, that if there's a berm, that the berm, top of the berm, be at least 2 feet higher than the 100-year flood elevation. If they're raising the home, that the floor elevation, lowest floor elevation, be at least 2 feet higher than the 100-year flood elevation. And one example of how the Valley Branch Watershed District might contribute to the program or fund the program would possibly be like one-third of the construction costs, not to exceed 25% of the 2018 taxable market value. And I just threw that out there as a discussion.
Somebody else has done that.
I am not aware of anybody having
just your criteria.
That
work,
was just a brainstorm idea to work from. And then as a attorney, Galowitz mentioned this policy. You need to consider that it would need to possibly apply to other parts of Valley Branch Watershed District. As Treasurer Marchand mentioned, there are over 100 homes that have been identified below the 100-year flood elevation of their adjacent water body, but I'm only aware of one that has an ongoing problem. You're probably familiar with Sunny Silver Lake in North St. Paul and Maplewood, and we've had reports of a lot of wet basements adjacent to that lake. This policy could be drafted just so it applies to landlocked basins. Silver Lake has an outlet, so this policy would not necessarily have to apply to Silver Lake, but if the managers wanted to, I guess they could also apply it to lakes without. Some future steps would be to continue to work with the City of Grant and Washington County on the emergency action plan that President Lucas mentioned. Research grants. I sat in on a workshop at Washington County after the budget workshop. The city or the county has adopted a hazard mitigation plan, and at the next meeting, I'll recommend that the Valley Branch Watershed Board adopt a resolution that hazard mitigation plan. by doing so, it makes you eligible for some of these grants. And then determine whether you'd like to continue to work with Indian Hills Golf Course on pumping.
Okay, I think it's a good draft.
So, just for the sake of starting the dialogue, I would like to say that I am for the purchase of at least one home in 2019. This isn't a quick moving process. I don't really want it to be necessarily a quick moving process. First, the implications to a budget increase would be astronomical for us. But I'd also like to demonstrate to the neighbors, the residents, the county, and ourselves that we can execute something like this well, that we can do a good job, that we can gain the confidence of the neighbors that we're going to execute this well, and to demonstrate that before we rush in to do and commit to doing immediately the second project. So I'd like to move forward. Personally, my opinion is that we move forward with one project. I would like that particular project to be used for stormwater storage to help alleviate in the best way that we can. We don't know what that looks like yet, but in the best way that we can to absorb some of the flooding and to potentially pursue wetland banking credits. And again, I'm not sure if that's going to be practical or feasible, but we have to work with our engineering staff to push that through if it's a practical solution. Stormwater storage might be a very practical solution and would assist in the flooding. It's not going to fix all the problems, but it would be a push structure. So that's my opinion and how I'd like us to proceed forward for 2019. And whatever comments the rest of you guys have, now's the time.
Well, you're reading my mind. My feeling is that the home should not be there. So in the end, I think purchasing them and either removing them or raising them, I'm not sure about that. I'm curious about what it would take to be able to turn a piece of above water mostly into something below water or in a more frequent flood.
Doesn't look as manager, it's going to depend on the site and how much soil needs to be moved.
Okay, so that's an unknown.
President Lucas Managers, one suggestion that we heard through our meetings with Washington County Commissioners would be to look at one property and apply whatever policy the managers come up with to that one property to see what the cost might be and how it might work for that one property.
In reference to that, the question for Attorney Gallows, so surrounding this Sunnybrook project, am I to assume based upon what I think I heard you say, and what John said, is that whatever we decide we're going to do, this would be a legal document that would, a legal process that surrounds Sunnybrook exclusively, correct?
Well, I
realize it could have an effect on the other 100 some homes that are in the 100 year floodplain, but this is a unique property, seeing as landlocked.
Right. I would like any policy to include language that nothing prevents the board from implementing a project that might alleviate the problem. So this is going to certainly, you know, mainly apply to something where projects just aren't going to alleviate the problem, which you've tried for years to really try to figure out how do we really prevent this permanently. We haven't been able to come up with that. So when you look at this policy, you're going to really probably only apply it when some other project isn't going to be feasible. So we're really gearing it towards Sunnybrook because we think this is going to be representative of all the other issues that would come forward that would require a policy such as giving someone the option to buy their home because we can't properly floodproof it. So to answer your question, I think you're really trying to formulate a broader policy But frankly, we know right now, here and now, it's going to apply to Sunnybrook.
Yep. So I don't have many comments about this. I think that and the cost share program, I'm not sure. I feel like I'd like to have. It seems hard for me to kind of come up with a formula for that at this point. I would rather talk about it being a cost share program, and as we work forward toward that, then determine what seems like a reasonable number. I think I would like to not commit to specific numbers, in my sense.
Well, that's fine, Lincoln. That's something that's discussed in 2 weeks at our next meeting or a workshop or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we have to solve every issue tonight.
No, or I mean, I would be, I mean, my thought is you write the policy without the numbers, and then you work toward the numbers and amend the policy if you want. That's kind of what I'm suggesting. Because I don't think we'll know anymore, too.
Well, if you put your mind to it, we could begin to start drafting some language that we could know a lot more in 2 weeks. And that's what I would rather see us do, rather than continue to kick it down the road. I'd rather, really noodle on it, and if it's just related to that cost share, because no, we don't know what that looks like. John just put out, a thought. That's something for us to noodle on, but in 2 weeks, think about it and come back with some ideas of what you'd like that to look like. I'm not sure why we can't begin to really have that, more challenging conversation in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. Just one very quick comment on that. Mr. Sewell, Dave, when you had those numbers out, when you did that that analysis, I think perhaps if it's not a problem for you to revisit that, see how that would benefit the homes that are at lower risk.
Well, I vaguely remember reading something about what he was coming up with.
The previous times we talked about it, and I'll just go over my thoughts. The previous times we discussed this, my primary concerns are around precedent and what the watershed district has done in the past. If you look at the projects that have been done around flood mitigation in the past, it's around $100,000 to $150,000 per home. That's typical. That's what the 2007 project was in 2018 money. So. And in my past experience, my past life as an engineer, I've seen flood projects where homes were purchased, but those homes were fundamentally destroyed by like 6, 8, 10 feet of water or more flowing through that home.
Mm-hmm.
Or homes that could be protected by sandbags. It's very hard for me to support buying that home. That would be, in my mind, like totaling a vehicle through the bumper. Right, and I'm not saying your homes are getting dinged by water, but if we can protect them with sandbags, I don't know if that justifies paying $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 for a home. That's kind of where I stand. So I do think it is our job to protect these homes. That is why we're here. I just think we should look at options that maybe don't involve buying them if they are not at risk of being completely totaled by flood.
So when you say sandbags, do you mean sandbags or do you mean something more permanent?
So I happened to live in Iowa during 2008 and I watched homes under 20 feet of water, right? Those homes we purchased and were destroyed. The homes that could be protected by physical sandbags,
those tend to get bought and destroyed, right? They, the probability of needing to sandbag that home and protect it with pumps was such that it didn't justify buying that home and tearing it down. So in my perspective, if these can actually be protected with sandbags every 20 or 30 years, maybe that's what we agree to, is a contract that we will hire a contractor to sandbag and pump these houses every 20 years to protect them. That's far cheaper than buying the home. I guess I'm just looking at buying the homes to me seems out of line of what we've historically spent per house and not necessarily justified based on 6 inches of water in a basement.
Steve, I appreciate your comments and perspective. The only clarification I'd like to make is it's not every 20 years. We're talking about 2017, 2016, I think again, 2014. It's much, much more frequently than
I understand that, but the probability every 10 years? I don't know what the number is.
Well,
President Lucas, managers, I believe that the lowest home, it's around every 5 years, the lowest couple homes.
The lowest two?
The lowest two, I think it's in the, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe it was in that five-year equivalent.
To a 20-year level with firming?
President Lucas, managers, it's a little bit more complicated with a landlocked lake to use berming because the water levels are high for a long period, extended period of time. And so berming might work, but you'd have to engineer the berm so that it has some sort of cutoff so that the water can't seep through the berm and get to the house. And then you have to make sure that the pump on the house side is going to work to get the water that collects on that side over to the lake. So it's a little bit different than in the past Valley Branch flood residual projects around Project 1007, because that Project 1007 created outlets for lakes. And so the theory is that the water, the flood level would not be high for an extended period of time. Sure, it would bounce up, but then it would recede. And so that's why the district offered floodproofing dollars to the homes that they weren't able to get the 100-year flood elevation low enough.
Supposed to be an open discussion amongst the managers. That's kind of my perspective and my background.
Of these 11 homes on this list here, 7 on this side, 4 on the next page, I think you mentioned this last week, or maybe you could refresh my memory. How many actually have been flooded? Have they all flooded? I thought there was a number of 4, but I might be wrong.
Well, I guess, President Lucas, managers, I guess it depends on your definition of ever flooded, because they did put up sandbags, and so I'm not sure if any of the homes have necessarily ever flooded. The lowest one may have, but I think the residents have been diligent about putting up those sandbags to protect their homes from flooding. So I know the first grouping, I believe all but the last two have put out sandbags based on our discussions that we had this summer.
So
five.
The last, no. Are you talking about of the 7 or of the 11 local?
Of the first, of this, on the, in the memo, not on the map.
Oh, okay.
On page 3, there's a list of 7 that are below the 20-year flood elevation, and the first 5 have sandbagged frequently. So the second to the last one, it's a little bit odd that that homeowner reports not sandbagging, because based on a survey from Cornerstone Land Surveying, it's almost exactly the same elevation as the third from the bottom home.
Yeah.
So the other 4 never had the sandbag? You're not sure. Again, maybe this isn't a fair question.
President Lucas, managers, on page 4, the homes listed there, the first one in that list, They've done some modifications to their home, and so I don't believe they've ever had to sandbag, but the low entry elevation used to be higher, and then they created a walkout from a basement, and so now it is lower. The next home, I don't believe they've ever had a sandbag, but they have hauled in fill to protect their property. And the next to the last one, we did not meet with them. That's a rental property. It's an old farmstead, and it's not adjacent to Sunnybrook Lake. I know that they have to access their property from a different location when it floods, but I'm not aware of the house actually flooding. And then the last one on the list, they said that they've never flooded.
So, along the same lines, I mean, last question, in access, so these 11 homes, do you recall, they've all had access issues based on the water? You know, they may end up getting the driveway here.
President Lucas, managers, the city has raised the roads here, so access is better than what it once was. For the properties around Sunnybrook Lake itself, there's generally a way to get around the lake with the loop road there. For the other properties, when the roads are flooded, and even though the city has raised them significantly, the roads are still below the 100-year flood elevation. And if the roads were to flood, there would be access problems for, I guess, looking at the figure, for the homes identified as 10, 6, 11, and 13. Mm. And the home number 8 over on Keats Avenue, you would still be able to access it from the north, but not from the south.
Well, and there are three homes, 1, 3, and 12, that if it's fully inundated, they're going to have problems, right?
1 and 3, you could, well, the road overtopping on that portion of Joslyn Road, it's up to the 100-year flood elevation. It would be about 2.5 feet. It's never gotten that high. It's I think it's been probably less than a foot back in 2014, but it does have the potential to, for the 1% probability to be inundated by 2.5 feet, and then it would be difficult to access, especially number 3. Number 1, you could come in from the south. And number 7 would also be difficult to access.
Lucas, would it be helpful if I just outline kind of the process that we would recommend as the attorneys if you determined to purchase a home? Because it might answer Manager Sewell's kind of some of his concerns. You would. It's really not talking about eminent domain. We want homeowners that are willing and wanting to be part of this process. So that we would approach them. We would have an appraisal done by an official appraiser. If they disagreed, we'd have a process where they could hire an appraisal, and we would look at them, and maybe have a third appraiser determine the value if they didn't agree with our appraisal. So we would go through a very equitable appraisal process on the value of the home.
Just out of curiosity, who would pay for that?
We would be part of it. And if they wanted to get their own because they didn't agree, then they would pay theirs, and then we might have to talk about a compromise of a third.
Yes,
it's very legitimate.
Curiosity, snowballing cost.
Yep, would start with it because we think it's an advantage to the district. I think we would start with the first appraisal, and then the homeowners could have an opportunity to review that and determine whether they believe it's equitable, if they would want to get their own, and then we could implement a process to how to break the tie or average the two, come to a conclusion with the third appraiser. At that point, we would look at what that cost would be, what the advantage would be to the district. So it might not just be a $500,000 purchase of a home that we're getting. We might be getting a holding pond or a bank where we can make money and use it for mitigation when somebody has to do a replacement wetland. and we would look at it as an overall. It may be that there's an opportunity that that property had higher ground to actually sell the lot so something could be built, and then your net costs aren't exactly the $500,000. I've had a little bit of experience with this with a different watershed district where we had this kind of policy, and we did a little bit of both. We totally bought homes out and left the land vacant. We bought homes, house, and sold it and allowed for building. And we also did where we just rehabbed them and made it floodproof and resold them. So it's not that every single project relating to a home is going to result in that full net expense, but you'll have the opportunity to determine the feasibility for the district in purchasing that home, the benefit to the overall district and the area against what it's going to cost. So I don't want you to think it's just a raw number. It could be if you decide to leave the lot vacant and continue to own it as a district, or to sell it, as you say, to neighboring homeowners that might feel like their land has now improved by having more acreage. So each time you make that decision, when you look at the policy, you'll say, all right, we do think this is a home. We're buying it would be feasible at this price because we're looking at maybe getting this benefit from it, not only that we don't have to worry about the homeowners being flooded and totally losing value on their home because we purchased it from them. And again, it's an option to buy, so it would be a restriction when anybody sells their house. There would be a restriction, but they would know it and they'd have a built-in buyer. They don't have the real estate commissions. They would just not have any high in the sky value because it's on a lake. It would be just, what is it appraised for at that time? And that would be the process. And then we go through a closing, and I have to tell you, for the project, this was all along Tanner's Lake, and I have to tell you, it really was a good result. There was a property owner that the proposal was a berm, and they said, no way, I don't want to have a place on a lake with a berm where I can't see the lake. And they understood the district cared and was willing to do that for them, but opted not to. So the idea is then it gives some flexibility in this policy to address kind of each homeowner as they sit to say, we know we're responsible trying to help you. Here's what our best thing is for district-wide use of money and funds. And can we help you? If not, we'll just continue with the emergency flood.
Makes sense. Thank you.
I'll continue with the next steps here. Nobody has any very specific questions related to that.
Oh, ma'am.
And John might have mentioned this already, actually, but there's some discussion about applying for grant applications. There is some discussion about maybe the Land and Legacy Water Program that really probably asked Washington County maybe to take the lead on that. There would be grant funding available. We could continue to pursue some of those options. Doesn't preclude any of that at this time.
Does the City of Grant have any
ownership
in this? From a financial standpoint?
Well, it's a good question. And we've had a few conversations with the mayor. Well, really going back historically, before of us, our time on the board, but Lincoln would know more historical records here. At a time when we have a more congenial relationship with the City of Grant and the mayor, and at least some good conversations. Previously, there was some really the question of watershed districts that they take some ownership, not only with some of the roads, but in some problem solving that did not go that well. We're in a better conversation time with them, but at the same time, they don't have the resources to sort of solve this problem. They did assist and raise the road level, like you asked them to last week, which is helping in the process. But we're not asking them at this time for some kind of taxation and monetary assistance. None. It's a very, very small community. Does that answer your question?
I don't think I like
the answer. You might not. I'm not sure that anything. Everybody wishes that there would be a really easy solution.
I think
it's not Grant's problem that the houses were permitted and built in the first place where they're built. Grant didn't have jurisdiction over that permitting process back in the late 1960s, no more than we had any permitting responsibility back in the 1960s.
And
so it's really a different, it's really a different issue then than it is now.
If I may add, that is an overriding concern. That is part of the argument, you know, that this has gone on too long and now we're going to do something about it.
Yeah, it gets to a point where it's not worth trying to duke it out too much. Let's pull it out.
I'm just saying the same thing happening in North St. Paul. Maplewood, North St. Paul, Oakdale, nobody wants to do anything. They want the watershed to take over. I might not know, it's a completely different thing, but and we're not talking
about that. Well,
don't muddy the water.
I'm trying to keep you guys on task and keep the work.
Well, I think that's entirely legitimate, and I would say that we've tried. And I think the reality is for what they can add, it's pretty minimal.
I'm not following what you're saying, Lincoln.
If Grant were to be able to provide some support, I think it would be pretty minimal. They did do the roads to some degree, and that helps. I think that from an operational standpoint, that they ought to be taking the lead on it, whether it be on emergency access and response. Figuring out ways for access in those times.
I don't think that's even appropriate, Lincoln, because it would really default to Washington County. Grant is a tiny community. How they can take the lead, they can have emergency response plans and have porta potties and a vendor set up to distribute or something like that. But if there's catastrophic flooding again, you have to look to the county.
Well, I understand that. I'm talking about leading. Okay.
You know, we get paid to do this. We can draft policies that say that we would implement an emergency response plan that would coordinate and cooperate with municipalities in the area so that hopefully Grant would step in or Washington County would step in. And we wouldn't, can't demand it of them, but we could ask that.
No, I would not expect it to be Valley Branch. I would expect the county to be the primary responsible party, I suppose. Anyway, yeah, that's down the road.
President Lucas, in response to what we're hearing from the managers, would it be appropriate if there was a motion from the board to have the law office, the attorney for the district, and the engineer incorporate some of the concerns that we're hearing tonight into a proposed draft of the policy to be heard and finalized, or does the board feel like as written it's okay? Because if we get the authority to go ahead and prepare a draft based on the comments we've heard from the managers at Sewell about the cost and about trying to put some numbers into cost sharing, perhaps we could tighten up this policy. It would give the homeowners a chance to review it and give comment on it. In the period before the managers were to vote on it. If that is kind of what we're hearing from the consensus of the managers, would you be willing to do that? Engineer Hansen, you agree to work with us on that?
I do.
So you said four or five of these houses have stated that they have flooding issues. How many of them have, their knowledge from your interviews, have flood damage?
Well, Lucas, do you remember?
Well, I think Mr. Schwartz, for sure, has had blood damage. Mm-hmm. Is he the lowest or the second?
He's the lowest.
He's the lowest. He's the lowest. Incidentally, he is not interested in selling whatsoever, so it's a risk. We've talked about that and the risk, considering that fishing with some kind of burn, which is not necessarily 100% for him either, given his lot and his view of the lake. There was some discussion when we talked with the county commissioners about the liability of installing a pump and some flood mitigation at that particular home. because if the pump fails, there's a lightning strike, there's a power outage in between one of these really large rain events, then are we responsible for that? And but he's for sure one that has to be some internal damage.
Okay.
So
I don't think I mean I think we can I don't think that there's much that we've come up with of significance in terms of differences. Well, I mean, I'm just, you know, Tracy was talking about taking our comments, and I think that
a more defined proposal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I think we should. So yes, I think we ought to keep moving on this. I do have one sort of detailed question on the homes below the 100-year flood level and above the 20-year. On this first paragraph, it says the terms of the cost share agreement would clearly state that the property can and likely will flood, but the measures installed are meant to lower the risk of flooding. Shouldn't we have a number in there that will flood when the water level reaches whatever or at some level?
For the Lucas managers, I agree. I was trying to bring up the point that Attorney Gallowitz spoke much more eloquently about that, that there is always going to be a risk of flooding.
Right.
So the document somehow needs to state that we're helping out to try to reduce your risk of flooding, but you could still flood.
Yeah.
If there's a cost share program. Right? That's your point, correct?
Well, yeah. Yeah, if we put money into it, yeah, then we have to be clear about what the outcome is going to be, and that it can flood.
So your joint effort, Attorney Gallowitz and Engineer Hanson, would do, just explain it to me one more time, that would do what?
Yeah. I think what we would do
firm this up a little bit more.
I think Johnson a beautiful job on this proposed strategy. I think that's probably what Manager Fetcher is saying, that, you know, it looks pretty good for now. We would tighten it up just to make sure we add some language to say that the board retains the right to look at each project and its feasibility.
The legalese.
Just a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I mean that's in corporate manager Sewell's comment that, hey, wait, it's $500,000 on one house, right? But if we look at it, is it feasible? Because will that give us a holding pond that might prevent flooding somewhere else? I mean, so we would just draft this so some of those concerns that
so there would be sort of language about those sort of different parameters to be considering.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think.
And what would
great.
You suggest then going forward so that the residents that are here tonight that have been so respectful and
they've been great
hanging back and letting us hash through this, and we appreciate it, that they get a chance to have input into that draft document? How would you recommend going about that?
I would recommend, if the managers are comfortable, that if we, once we get a draft that we're going to propose to be in the board packet for your next meeting, that be made public. They'll know it's still a draft, they'll know that you haven't approved it, but it'd be made public so they have some opportunity to review it, and then we can hear from them after they've reviewed it, their thoughts, so that there is a meaningful public forum.
Does there need to be a public hearing before adoption of the
policy?
If
we're going to treat that as a project for $500,000, we have to put it out for bid, and appraisals still need to be some. But if we're going to have a private agreement with that homeowner, we may not. So I think what we really want is good public input on this strategic proposal.
Yeah, I'm talking about, is there a need for public hearing on the adoption of a policy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So without saying anything, could I see a show of hands that would be acceptable to you guys? Does that sound like something that would be reasonable if we did that draft document, that you would have a chance to see it and then provide comments on it? We're back to school. Help me out here, folks. All right. Okay.
We're going for everybody to have me all the time.
All right, thank you.
Do we have to make a motion?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, we do.
Do we?
Okay. Make a motion that we have attorney's office, Attorney Galowitz, and engineering department, Engineer Hanson, Bar Engineering, make a more concise document based upon the discussions they've heard today and enable the public to read that as a preliminary document before we adopt it as a.
Second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, we have a path forward.
Sounds great. Good work.
So let me just say one thing to the audience. If you have any other questions, please, about the discussion and our path forward, please feel free to reach out to me, John, any of the board members here, John, and get that information, preferably in an email, so that we can consider that as we move forward talking with the attorney's office and drafting our draft plan.
I do have one question. When can we anticipate that document being made public?
And where will it be posted?
President Lucas, managers, the packets go out Friday around 2 o'clock, and so I could
before it'd be
next Friday, 2 o'clock, and I could email that a PDF of the document.
What do you say?
Attorney Gallows, are you okay with that?
You know what? We will make that happen.
Okay.
So a week from this coming, a week from tomorrow.
Really? We have a meeting.
Moving forward very expeditiously.
The meeting is.
Okay.
We have one meeting.
All right, everybody. We've got continued business to. We're not done yet here tonight, so we're going to move on with our agenda. And the next thing that we have to consider is a Ramsey County request for Valley Branch to own and maintain the Silver Lake outlet. John.
President Lucas, managers, Vice President Fetcher, and I attended, led a meeting with North St. Paul, Oakdale, Maplewood, Ramsey County,
DNR,
to talk about the Silver Lake outlet and high water level concerns from the residents. That meeting was held, I think, back in September. And Ramsey County has now officially requested that Valley Branch Watershed District take over the ownership of the Silver Lake outlet. There's a memo, or there's a letter in your packet. They basically say that even though Ramsey County has been responsible over the last 60 some years of the outlet, they don't own any land in the area. The outlet itself isn't even in Ramsey County, it's in Washington County. And they feel that Valley Branch Watershed District, as a larger entity that is responsible for drainage systems, would be a better fit to operate and maintain the outlet. The culvert itself, the outlet at Silver Lake, is a metal plate in front of a culvert, and the culvert would remain under somebody else's jurisdiction, whether that's Ramsey County or MnDOT. It's a state aid highway, but the outlet, they're looking for somebody else to take over responsibility. It is a little bit different style of outlet than Project 1007 and other outlets within Valley Branch Watershed District. It does require minor maintenance with it frequently because leaves and debris kind of catch up in it, and that needs to be removed. And so I think in order to keep costs down, if the Watershed District wishes to take over the responsibility, we'd work with Inspector Brower to visit the site somewhat routinely and to rake out any leaves or branches.
The
Lake Association and others, volunteers could do it, but I would really think that you would need somebody that was going to lead and not depend on volunteers, because it is critical that it be maintained.
So is it your recommendation that we do this?
I think I'm going to kick the can. I think Vice President Fetcher's recommendation is that we do this.
Right? Yeah, it's consistent with that's consistent with how DNR works, and it's consistent.
Thank you, sir.
Given that we already manage outlets and most watershed districts do. So the only question I have is about an easement and whether there's an easement over that.
President Lucas, managers, that is a good question. I don't know if it's within right away or if it's an easement or on private property.
Well, it may very well be right away, which would imply an easement. I don't know how that works if MnDOT has a right of way, if that means that it's an easement for a watershed or not.
I mean, I'm sure they would allow you access to use their easement. The question I have is, what's the timing and when they want you to take this over? Because will they wait a year so you can budget for it? I mean, I'm sure you haven't budgeted for it yet.
No, we haven't. Yeah. Thank you. And my concern, of course, is
cost. It's not going to hit.
No, we're looking off the top of your head.
Oh,
maintenance costs, aside from the inspector fees?
Yeah, zero. Most of the time.
So minimally?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, unless we come around to making changes to it, that's a different ballgame.
Could it?
That would be a budgeted event because it needs to happen real quick.
So, John, yes, maintenance is basically leaves and stuff. Sticks and stones and stuff like that, whatever. Trash getting in there.
Yeah.
What's the life cycle? What's the lifespan of this? In your estimation of what we have before we have to, we have to replace it.
Oh yeah.
Probably 200 years, I'd say.
It is pretty heavy duty. I guess another maintenance issue might be that it does get tampered with frequently,
mm-hmm.
and so there
it
might
has.
Be some need
I don't
to.
Think it is.
But it has in the past.
It has in the past.
And so there might be some need to deal with any tampering. I just want to remind the managers that I believe that there is a line item budget dealing with Silver Lake. I'm looking at the budget right now.
I might have asked for something in there. But I don't remember.
And I know I was looking at it the other day and I thought that there was a line item budget in here for having meetings because of the anticipation that something like this and dealing with the request to lower the lake level would go. Yes, line item number 7 says investigate modifying Silver Lake, and I guess the preliminary budget was $10,000, but that was eliminated. There is no line of budget for it.
So I'm going to go back and ask John the question that I asked again. What do you see as the downside of taking this over? Understanding
President,
that Vice President Fletcher wants us to take it. Right?
President Lucas, managers, I think the downside is that it's additional cost to do the maintenance and to do the inspection, but I think it fits the responsibilities of the watershed district, I think, more so than other projects, maybe because this is a cross-jurisdictional issue. It's going from Ramsey County to Washington County. It's going from one municipality to another municipality. I think it makes sense for Valley Branch Watershed District to take over the responsibility.
One thing that makes me wonder is because there's a fair amount of, tampering. I mean, I at least remember this happening at least 4 times in my tenure on the board in the last 9 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
People are messing with that structure outlet all the time. And, you know, we often, it doesn't change how we request or advise residents when they say the lake is too high. They're still not going to have any authorization to lower the rear structure outlet just because
right.
we're taking over the maintenance.
Yeah, it doesn't change any of that.
Alright, I just wanted to
That's true.
Double yeah. check that.
President Lucas, managers, about 10 years ago there was a group looking at adding a trail adjacent to Century Avenue, Highway 120, Geneva, it's got several names, Division Street. And at that time, we were looking at dealing with storm sewer with this trail and upgrades to the road, and thought that that would be a perfect opportunity to put the outlet of Silver Lake into a manhole structure that is more tamper-proof. So there is maybe the option of reconstructing the outlet in the future, and so that might be some added cost, but hopefully you could work with MnDOT and the cities to do a cost share project. The trail project is dead because there is no state funding for it.
You wouldn't be having to deal with any sort of maintenance or modification or anything like that.
But it is 43 years old.
Is at least that. The meeting that Vice President Fetcher and I had with the city was to basically say, no, you're not going to be able to change the outlet. You're not changing the outlet elevation. You're not going to lift the weir plate and manipulate the water levels because there's huge downstream impacts, and there's state statute, state rules that say if you're going to change outlet of a lake, you need to buy drainage easements all around the lake, and you need to evaluate the impacts downstream, and there's a very spelled out process that you'd have to follow, and at least the city staff officials understood that that is not going to happen, and so there'll be a open house sometime this winter to explain that to the lakeshore.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion. That we adopt the Silver Lake outlet structure, take ownership of it in the year 2020.
I'll second that motion.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Are there any questions?
No, why would you do that? You have the budget for it. No, we don't. No cost to it.
You never know. It gives us some time.
He just said there's cost to it. It's maintenance.
Yeah.
Well, there hasn't been any maintenance costs on that thing for years.
Right.
No reason to think it's going to happen.
All of a sudden it'll be better.
We did try to weld it up, but that didn't work, so we haven't done anything with that. So the only thing is the inspection.
But that's what he said. He said there's continuous
small
meetings. John, can you explain?
President Lucas, managers. There would unlikely be maintenance that you'd have to hire a contractor, but there would be maintenance in having to spend Jeff's time or Bar Engineering's time to visit the outlet, rake out leaves and twigs, and do the annual inspection.
Or Lincoln's time when he walks around the lake.
Well, you're not authorized to stay in there.
Well,
I
do it.
What? Oh my goodness. I have a license for that.
So at $200 a month times 12, it could be a budgeting item for Jeff to go over there. So $2,400 a year.
Look at it.
Look at it, and that's a couple hours of time.
No, I get all that, yeah. Right.
But I mean, if you want to look at how much it's going to be roughly added to our budget, it would be $2,400
a year. Well, I'm just looking at our budget's considerably increased. 2019 as it is, based upon what we just discussed and a few other things, I thought it would be best to maybe move it into the next year after that. But I mean, it could be swayed one way or the other.
I just wanted to give you the facts.
Well, there is that thing called contingency, of which there's a good deal of money, and you know, to wait on it and to have Ramsey County have to deal with it. It's not their property and not their jurisdiction,
but
and not theirs.
To make that argument, they're not really doing anything, right?
No,
right?
Can't argue with that.
And then we assume it, and then all of a sudden we get costs, and this buys us time, and that was my perspective for seconding the motion. Buy some time, and then we can legitimately place it on our budget as a line item. And then if anything comes up, we can certainly address it that way. And transparency and all the trappings of handling this the right way.
Well, we got the Don Shield rule, I am certain.
Absolutely.
If you don't know what the Don Shield rule is, is that to spend more time talking about it.
Right.
Board, then is necessarily and what this is actually about. So Don Shield was an individual that lived in Acton that I actually ended up replacing. He was on the board for how many years?
A decade.
A long time. So he's famous for making that comment when subjects went round and round and round.
I just made a motion.
Yeah. Wow, just ask me about what the Don Shield rule.
Yes, I did.
Okay, so we know what the motion is? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay.
All right.
Boom.
And he's still going to make it in 2019. You know he will. So, Lincoln, it's going to be okay.
I don't care. All right. I don't care.
Well, it just seems, you know, you got to keep it on the docket.
One more year. Moving right along, everybody. We have the 50th anniversary. Next topic under manager items. I did reach out to the city administrator, Ron Morse. Asking if he could participate in whatever happened with the ribbon cutting ceremony in Acton. When he gets back to me, I'll let you know, but I put in an email request to him to participate in some sort of informal or more formal way. Anybody else have anything on the 50th anniversary?
No, ma'am, just that I've been storing the bottles.
Okay, hopefully at low cost.
Electricity, rent, sure, no big deal. I'm a nice guy.
All right, next thing. The annual budget workshop with the Washington County Commissioners. How about some of you other folks that were there share with Dave your thoughts about the County Commissioners?
This is the second meeting I've gone to, and it's the one last year too, and I thought it was much better. And I would concur with Commissioner Priestel that I thought it was good that there was some discussions about the budget's in a little more detail, because there are, you know, we're a levying body and it's consuming taxpayer money, and I thought that was good. Unfortunately, given the time, there was a change of their format and they had other things to do, so there wasn't an ability for them to go through all the watershed district budgets. But I think maybe in the future, the commissioners could have a meeting just about the details of all the watershed districts and maybe highlight some, like we did. You highlighted the top three things that increased our budget, and I think that's useful for a good knowledge base for the citizens of North.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was good.
All right.
And I was appreciative and a little surprised, but clearly you did your homework. You all met with them and they supported them.
Yep.
That's good. Thank you.
All right.
I have one question. One item. Is there more on that?
Yep, we're not done yet.
Okay. Well, I have something related to ask. I'll wait until it's time.
Okay.
If I may, sorry.
Yeah.
When he has that question about Afton, I will also have a question. Quick question.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let's see, where are we? So the solicitation of engineering, legal auditing, accounting, and other professional services proposals. John, I assume you know that the letters that you put in the package are pretty dated and all have David Buchek's name.
Yes, he knows that. They're exempt.
And the old logo.
President.
Yes, and the old logo.
That's
classic. That's Valley Branch classic.
Yes.
That's,
oh, is that it?
That's what the cover said. Is that historically this is the memo that's been used, and so if you plan to use the same letter, then we would definitely update it with the right footer of the manager's names and the new logo. But you are required every 2 years to solicit for professional services. And so we're requesting that you authorize Attorney Gallowitz to advertise that. In the past, in the last couple cycles, the managers have just posted notice on the website rather than sending a notice to the Pioneer Press or Star Tribune or the local newspaper.
Perfect. We need a motion for this?
Yeah, we'll need a date from when the submission should be in. So if you want to have a hearing or your... Do you have an annual meeting where you do all the appointments?
It's our meeting in December, right?
Yes.
The first one in December?
December
13th. The only one.
Oh, okay. So you, then wouldn't you want these submitted at least a week before that, or by December 1st, perhaps? I don't know your timing, but all we want to do is make sure in this notice we put a date where the
I'll make a motion to authorize our legal team to put out these solicitations for services with a due date of a week before our next meeting, or our meeting in December.
If the packet goes out on, let's say, the sixth the week before, how about if it would be December 5th so that the proposals could be in the packet?
Yeah.
I think that would be, if I have that right.
Okay.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Right. President Lucas, could I ask one question on the RFPs? In the past, I believe you've requested them for legal, engineering, and auditing. Mm-hmm. You haven't always asked for accounting? Or
I think that Ed did sort of a informal accounting.
Yes, ma'am.
I thought that was auditing.
Oh, accounting.
It was auditing and accounting.
Okay. Would you?
Does that count?
Do you recommend that we do accounting as well?
I don't know exactly. I'm sorry that I don't know exactly what you do with the accountant. Do you? Do they do your accounting daily? But your auditor would then review the accountant. So I'm not sure that you necessarily have to put the accountant out for proposal.
I think we'll keep it in there.
Okay.
Yes.
You can't go wrong, can you?
Right?
No. Yeah.
Right. Are there any other services like
beaver trapping?
No, I don't know. That you want to advertise for?
Maybe our inspector.
I heard you. Oh, yeah.
I didn't say no. I don't have any.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll move to cancel the November 22nd and December
27th. Second.
I think we
got to
go back to the vote.
Oh,
we
didn't vote for that.
I thought we already did that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Solicitation. Aye. It's been approved. Okay. Next one.
I move to cancel the November, the last meetings in November and December, which are the 22nd and 27th. Of various other activities that people
use. Second. Second that motion.
Second, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, canceled. Okay, so both Lincoln and Ed want to say something about
Well, I have a question about paying the answer.
Exactly, that's exactly what I was going to ask.
Paid, and
if I may elaborate.
Yeah.
Okay, so I believe we owe them $100,000 per our agreement, 50 and 50, and right now I believe we are at 300,000. So we pay them off, we're down to 200. I don't know how many more bills we have coming in, but I think with paying them, we will remain tight till the end of the year. Yeah. So we'll have essentially nothing in our coffers. We'll get up another fat bill from John, right? So,
well,
that'll take a bite out of us.
If we owe them 50 a year, then why are we paying them?
Oh, because we didn't pay them last year.
They did not request it.
We did pay them.
They didn't request it, and so we just kind of.
I still haven't requested it.
Yeah, and they still. Holy cow.
So, with that, we have in the budget for 2018 still remaining, and we're at the end of October. We have 66,000 or roughly 67,000 remaining in the Sunnybrook budget that we announced. We have not pumped, done any pumping with Mike Reagan. I don't expect us to.
Nope.
That was 20,000 that we have in the budget for that. I kind of did a quick scan and you guys could do the same for, there's some things that were unnecessary or that we're not doing. We're going to end with the health septic assessments. We don't have anything else coming in for that. That project is terminated at the end of this year, so that's another $12,000.
Right.
So, I don't know, Ed, I think that we're going to be in fairly good shape.
Yep.
No action hasn't requested it, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't keep moving that thing forward right. And balancing so that, our budget.
That's essentially what I was asking the board.
Allocated,
but
for the
center.
You were talking about the Kells Creek money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now this is budgeted money.
It's budgeted money.
So the reality is we have, so we have $380,000 is what you say at the end of September, which is. Anyway, so it seems to me that we don't actually get money of significance until next July. Is that correct?
No.
We get remainders.
In December.
Correct.
Oh, we get December, half of it, and then the remainder is in January. That's right. Okay.
I get it.
Got it.
I get to run the risk.
All right. So, I'll make a motion to pay Afton $100,000 for 2017 and 18 commitments.
I will second that motion, but I would like to have a brief discussion.
Go ahead.
John, give me your input on that, because we've talked about this before. I don't particularly like to put it off. What do you think? Just...
President Lucas Managers, you did sign an agreement with Afton that you would pay them $50,000 per year for 10 years, and you've only paid $50,000, and
yes,
that
sir.
Agreement was signed, I believe, 3 years ago. Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All of you say aye.
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 We have one thing that we haven't addressed yet that was on our plates, I think, was the Farney Creek Stabilization Project. That's something that you put out with John and you signed?
President Lucas, the managers approved at a previous meeting to authorize you to sign that, and so no action at the meeting needs to be taken.
Oh, well, I've done this
one. No. President Lucas, you need to sign that and give it to me.
Yeah.
But you were authorized to do that at a previous meeting.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
You don't have to sign that. Last thing is we have meetings November 8th and December 13th. Anybody know that they're not going to be here during those meetings?
I think I'm going to be here.
Tony's on vacation again.
Wow.
All right. Anything else? And then we have the mod.
I think we ought to authorize use of funds for mod.
I think we've already done that.
We've already established that.
Yes, sir.
So the MOD annual conference is November 29th to December 1st. There are a few of us going to that. Yes.
President Lucas, if there's a manager who plans to go who has not registered, please let me know as soon as possible, because we have some extra rooms that we will be releasing.
I'll take it. You have room for me, right, John?
Yes.
So we haven't seen the actual registration for the conference yet come out, have we?
Yes.
It's online.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see a notice for that. So.
I'll send notice with my meeting notes tomorrow.
All right. So are there any more comments? Otherwise, I think we're...
Move to adjourn.
Seconded.
So moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.
Commissioner Mueller. Thank you, sir.
How did we do?
Just a second. You're still being recorded.
Yeah. Are we...